Now, this would normally be the time for the coffee break, but I understand that there's a delay and that we can continue on until 10:30 or shortly thereafter. So, we may as well proceed on to the next paper, and that is a proposal to measure shadow bands electronically by Mr. G.A. Theed of the Hamilton Center.
Thank you, Dr. Sequist. I think I will not use the microphone if everyone can hear me at the rear. First of all, as a member of the Hamilton Center, let me add my voice of welcome to the delegates from across this great country of ours. We all hope that you have a fine weekend. And of course, a word of welcome to the visitors from the United States who are also here. Attempts to measure the physical properties of shadow bands that are associated with solar eclipses have been frustrated over the years by the diffuse nature of these rapidly moving bands and by the low light levels that are prevalent during solar eclipses. Because visual observations tend to be subjective, several photographic and electronic means of measuring these bands have been attempted with varying means of success. This paper outlines a proposal to measure the characteristics of shadow bands electronically. And I'm just about ready for the first slide if you are up there. Well, we'll... The problem with the shadow bands is that they are so diffuse. Visual observation methods have been used in the past, and the problems here are such that two observers who are observing the same thing will not necessarily record and write down the same observations at a later time. So I think the key here is to measure, and attempts, as I say, have been made to photograph them in the past and measure them electronically. This artistically, with a little artistic license, attempts to show roughly what the characteristics of the shadow bands are. On a white screen, which is used for observing the bands, these bands show up as roughly parallel shadow bands with a dark area which has a characteristic of width and therefore something to measure, and with a light area which also has a characteristic of width and therefore something else that should be measured. The third characteristic of a shadow band is that it's traveling, and usually they travel at right angles to their direction and at a fair rate of speed. Visually, as I say, they're quite clear. Attempts to photograph them are not quite as easy. This is a sketch of the observing arrangement with the eclipsing sun in the background so that it shines at right angles to the shadow band screen, and the observer stands in front of the screen with his back to the eclipse and either handles cameras or manipulates the equipment or just plain observes the bands with his eye and attempts to make some kind of an observation. This is the setup that I used in Elizabethtown, North Carolina for the March 1970 eclipse. The background is the Manana Hotel, but it was a source of 110-volt power, which we needed for tape recorders and so on. But this is the shadow band screen, and on it is mounted a clock, and I had a light meter made for measuring the light level for setting the cameras. And there were photocells on the screen used to measure the attempt to measure the shadow band electronically. The The eclipse did occur on schedule, and this photograph is a copy of a slide, and therefore degraded, of a picture taken by Peter Ashenhurst of the Hamilton Center, who was along the expedition with myself. Now, this is a typical photo cell. It's a cadmium sulfide cell, as a matter of fact. It's the one I used for the last expedition. From here on in, I'd like to talk not about the last expedition because it had only moderate results. I'd like to talk about what really I'd like to do the next time, and I have this paper really presents a proposal for actually measuring electronically these shadow bands and working these characteristics out, the widths of the dark areas, the widths of the light areas, and the speed of travel. Now, what about a single photocell? What are its limitations? Well, a single photocell is limited in that it can only measure the what's happening at one point. And therefore, as the bands travel across the face of the cell, it will see the alternate light and dark areas. But it doesn't measure wavelength. It doesn't measure the width of the dark area or the light area. And it doesn't measure the speed of travel of the bands either. The reason is because the two are interrelated. The wavelengths, these widths, are related to the traveling speed. So if you wound up with very narrow dark and light areas that were traveling, and the bands were traveling rather slowly, you would get exactly the same result on the output of it if you put this into a tape recorder or a pen recorder. You get the same result if you had wide dark areas and wide light areas, and the bands were traveling rather quickly. So the things are mathematically tied in, and you need another piece of information. And really what you need is a second photocell. Now, what are the characteristics of the photocell? What should it be able to do? Well, it needs to be sensitive in low light levels, down to about 0.2 foot candles. It should be able to work very readily in this area. It should have a spectral response, which is, let's say, what you want. This one is quite good in the visual range, but its speed of response is not very good, so therefore I will not use it again. The spectral response I'm looking for is one in the visual region rather than the infrared or ultraviolet. Again, the speed of response should be good. It should be able to quickly adapt to the fact that a dark area is crossing its face, and then a light area, and then a dark area, and be able to follow these changes in light level very closely. And the next characteristic of the photocell is that the associated circuitry, what it feeds, should be simple as possible, and even cheap, but reliable. And of course, simplicity means reliability, because there are fewer things to go wrong. Now, what would the outside of the photocell look like if we were to look at it on a chart recorder? Well, this is a very rough idea of what the wave detail could look like. If we were to have a pen which was recording making a line on a piece of paper that was traveling, we would then get a graph of photocell output against time. And when the cell was being crossed by a dark area, the output would be less, say. And when the cell is being crossed by a light area, the output would jump higher. And so you would get this response roughly corresponding, well, exactly corresponding, hopefully, to what was happening on the screen. We're dealing with something that happens about 20 times a second, again, depending on where what the event really is, where you are. It could be different 50 miles away. But let's say 20 cycles a second, which means we're looking at 25,000 of a second here. And it must be able to jump up and respond to the other level. I've shown a slope on the change from dark to light. This is purely a guess. Some of the visual observations that have been made show that there are fringes, variations, colored bands, you name it, that occur just at the junction between the light and dark areas. Hopefully, a photocell that has a very fast response would be able to make some measure of what's occurring in this region. I have shown it as a straight but sloped line. Now what do we wind up with? Well, As I said, a single photocell really can't measure the characteristics of wavelengths and these widths and the speed of the bands all by itself. The proposal really is, and this is the crux of this little paper, that you use two photocells, one which is mounted in the center of the shadow band screen and at the center of a pivoted arm, so that the arm could be rotated and the reference photocell, marked R, is not affected at all by rotation. And this is, of course, why it's called a reference cell. The another photocell is up at this end of the pointer, marked P, which is for pointer cell, and it is a known distance from R, be it anything you like, say 2 feet or 3 feet. And the fact that this arm is able to rotate means that we can now do things with the experiment. And this is the proposal. When the bands occur, and they're running across the sheet, the arm is rotated by an observer manually, so that it is parallel to the band. This can be done with a knob at the front, or directly reaching in and operating it, or perhaps a better way would be to have a Selsun tie, a Selsun motor there behind, and a Selsun control transmitter at the control center, which means you can be standing back from the screen and see it a little more clearly and more accurately align the arm, I believe, to the bands than you would if you were standing right up at the screen and attempting to do this. At any rate, the first step is to align the arm parallel to the band. And now what do we really have? Well, we have now the two cells that are seeing events exactly, let's say, in phase. When the reference cell is covered with a dark area, so is the pointer cell. And as the bands sweep across the page or across the screen, the two cells see exactly the same thing. And the output, if you were to record this on a 2-pin recorder, would look like this. This is the reference cell at the bottom with its output waveform. This is the pointer cell with its output waveform. And you'll note the two are exactly in phase. And at a given point of time, they're both light, dark, etc. And so this sets up the reference condition. Now, the arm is then rotated through 90 degrees, actually, from a point where it's parallel to the bands until it's pointing in the direction of travel. And this should be done fairly quickly, say within 2 or 3 seconds. Smoothly, but fairly quickly. And this is what happens to the pen recorder during that time. The reference recording, which is on the bottom, is not affected, and therefore its output is exactly the same as before. The pointer cell, however, will show, first of all, an increased wavelength due to what you could call a Doppler effect. It's the same effect, really. And the next thing that you notice is that, first of all, the two cells are in phase, and then there's a relative phase shift because of the different wavelengths until we wind up where they're out of phase at this point. And then they would shift again until they're in phase. As long as the arm is rotating, this relative phase shifting will take place. And about 3 seconds later, when you've reached this condition, where the arm is now perpendicular to the wavelength, but actually pointing in the direction of wave travel, you now wind up with some kind of a phase relationship between the two, depending on the wavelength of the shadow bands. On this particular example, the reference cell is covered with a dark area. The pointer cell is somewhere in the middle of a light area. And the output waveform, again, now looks like this. Both cells, the reference cell at the bottom and the upper cell, have the same wavelength again because the arm has now stopped rotating. But there is some kind of a fixed permanent relationship on phase between the two signals. Here they're shown almost 180 degrees out of phase. But the phase relationship is now fixed. Now, from the recording, you can, by looking at it from the time where they were in phase and had the same wavelength until they were, again, had the same wavelength when you stop rotating the arm and had the same wavelength again, somewhere in that strip of paper, you can count up the number of dark and light areas that the one cell, the reference cell, saw, and then count in the same period of time the number of dark and light areas that the pointer cell saw. The pointer cell will see less than the reference cell. There'll be fewer cycles in there in the same time, provided the arm is rotated with the direction of travel of the band. And this will give the exact number of wavelengths, shadow band wavelengths, that is represented by the distance between the reference and the pointer cell. And it's there the wavelength has now fallen out. So this is really the formula, of course, very simple for calculating it. The wavelength of the shadow bands, which is, let's say, a dark area plus a light area, is equal to the distance between the photocells, which is, say, are 2 feet, divided by the number of cycles of phase shift. Let's say that there were three more wavelengths measured by the reference cell than there were by the pointer, which means that the distance between the pointer cell and the reference cell is exactly three wavelengths. So in our case, the shadow band wavelength would be a third of 2 feet. Now from this, the velocity then falls out. The velocity is equal to the shadow band wavelength, which is previously calculated, times the frequency, and the frequency is strictly the number of cycles per second, which would be about 20 cycles. Now what kind of equipment do you need to look at this, to record this phenomenon? Well, you need a pointer cell and a reference cell, each of which feed through an amplifier, perhaps, into a two-channel chart recorder is the easiest and simplest way to do it. A two-channel chart recorder, however, may be a difficult thing to obtain to take to the field. A two-channel tape recorder is a simpler instrument to obtain. Here, we would merely feed the pointer cell and the reference cell through a little more complicated circuitry, but wind up feeding the signals into a channel each of a stereo tape recorder, and this would then come home in a magnetic form, which then needs to be played back from the two-channel tape recorder through some complicated equipment, perhaps, it can be reasonably simple, into a two-channel chart recorder where then the analysis takes place exactly as before. That is really the sum and substance of the proposal. And I would like to carry this out in the eclipse next year, in July of 1972. In closing, it should be mentioned that this experiment will give better results if it's performed under sunny skies than under a cloudy cover. Best of luck to everyone participating in the 72 eclipse.
Are there any questions? The back?
Could you not have right angle pointers and measure both at the same time?
Fixed right angle pointers?
Yeah.
Yes, you could. Yes, there are two problems, I think, with that. First of all, you now need three-channel equipment, which is a little difficult, more difficult to obtain than two-channel pen recorders or two-channel stereo recorders, tape recorders. And the second thing is, this has the advantage of being able to, you can start off exactly orienting these two cells parallel to the waves themselves, and you can orient it then perpendicular exactly. With a fixed couple of cells mounted on the screen somewhere, you stand a chance that the band will come in at an angle to the line joining the two cells. And you have to then work out some kind of a mathematical relationship between what you're really seeing and what you want to measure. This does it directly. This is the only advantage. Yes, sir? Have the arm rotate continuously. Why do you say it's an advantage? I'm interested. Which would act as a marker pulse, isn't it? Yes. I'd be happy to discuss that with you afterwards, after the paper. Okay, I think we're going to be throwing off this podium here in a minute. But
time for one more question.
do that? Well,
there appears to be no more questions.
Thank you, Mr.
Very interesting presentation. Well, I guess now we can break for coffee. I see no arms waving from the back saying that we can't, so I would suggest that we try to get back here in 15 minutes, which will be about 10 to 11.